Chapter 2. I'm running away through throngs of vendors and beggar children and foul-smelling camels, narrowly missing two men carrying saris that hang from a piece of rope attached to two poles at either end. I dart off down a narrow side street, following the twisting, turning alleys, till I have to stop and catch my breath. Hot tears spill down my cheeks. I let myself cry now that there is no one around to see me.
God save me from a woman's tears, for I have no strength against them.
That's what my father would say if he were here now. My father, with his twinkling eyes and bushy moustache, his booming laugh when I please him, and far-off gaze, as if I don't exist, when I've been less than a lady. I can't imagine he'll be terribly happy when he hears how I've behaved. Saying nasty things and storming off isn't the sort of behaviour that's likely to win a girl's case for going to London. My stomach aches at the thought of it all. What was I thinking? There's nothing to do but swallow my pride, make my way back and apologise. If I can find my way back. Nothing looks at all familiar to me. Two old men sit cross-legged on the ground, smoking small brown cigarettes. They watch me as I pass. I realise that I am alone in the city for the first time. No chaperone, no entourage, a lady unescorted. It's very scandalous of me. My heart beats faster and I quicken my pace. The air has grown very still. A storm isn't far off. In the distance, I can hear frantic activity in the marketplace, last-minute bargains being struck before everything is closed down for the afternoon shower. I follow the sound and end up where I started. The old men smile at me. An English girl, lost and alone on Bombay's streets. I could ask them for directions back to the marketplace, though my Hindi isn't nearly as good as my father's. And for all I know, where is the marketplace may come out as I covet your neighbour's fine cow. Still, it's worth a try. Pardon me, I ask the elder man, the one with a white beard. I seem to be lost. Could you tell me which way to the marketplace? The man's smile fades, replaced by a look of fear. He's speaking to the other man in sharp bursts of a dialect I don't understand. Faces peek from windows and doorways, straining to see what's bringing the trouble. The old man stands, points to me, to the necklace. He doesn't like it? Something about me has alarmed him. He shooes me away, goes inside and shuts the door in my face. It's refreshing to know that it's not just my mother and Sarita who find me intolerable. The faces at the windows remain, watching me. There's the first drop of rain. The wet seeps into my dress, a spreading stain. The sky could break open at any moment. I've got to get back. No telling what mother will do if she ends up drenched and I'm the cause. Why did I act like such a petulant brat? She'll never take me to London now. I'll end up in an Austrian convent surrounded by women with moustaches, my eyes gone bad from making intricate lace designs for other girls' trousseaus. I could curse my bad temper, but it won't get me back. Choose a direction, Gemma, any direction. Just go. I take the path to the right. The unfamiliar street leads to another and another, and just as I come around a curve, I see him coming, the boy from the marketplace. Don't panic, Gemma. Just move slowly away before he sees you. I take two hurried steps back. My heel catches on a slippery stone, sending me sliding into the street. When I right myself, he's staring at me with a look I cannot decipher. For a second, neither of us moves. We are as still as the air around us that's either promising rain or threatening a storm. A sudden fear takes root, spreads through me with cold speed, given wings by conversations I've overheard in my father's study, tales over brandy and cigars about the fate of an unescorted woman overpowered by bad men, her life ruined forever. But these are only bits of conversation. This is a real man coming toward me, closing the distance between us in powerful strides. He means to catch me, but I won't let him. Heart pounding, I pull up my skirts, ready to run. I try to take a step, and my legs go shaky as a calf's. The ground shimmers and pitches beneath me. What is happening? Move. Must move. But I can't. A strange tingle starts in my fingers, travels up my arms into my chest. My whole body trembles. A terrible pressure squeezes the breath from me, weighs me down to my knees. Panic blooms in my mouth like weeds. I want to scream. No words will come. No sound. He reaches me as I fall to the ground. Want to tell him to help me. Focus on his face, his full lips, perfect as a bow. His thick, dark curls fall across his eyes, deep, brown, foot-long lashes eyes. Alarmed eyes. Help me. The words stuck fast inside me. I'm no longer afraid of losing my virtue. I know I must be dying. Try to get my mouth to tell him this, but there is nothing but a choking sound in my throat. A strong smell of rose and spice overpowers me as the horizon slips away, my eyelids fluttering, fighting to stay awake. It's his lips that part, move, speak. His voice that says,
"It's happening."
The pressure increases till I feel I will burst, and then I'm under a swirling tunnel of blinding colour and light, pulling me down like an undertow. I fall forever. Images race by. I'm falling past the 10-year-old me, playing with Julia, the rag doll I lost on a picnic a year later. I'm 6, letting Sarita wash my face for dinner. Time spins backward, and I am 3, 2, a baby, and then something pale and foreign, a creature no bigger than a tadpole and just as fragile. The strong tide grabs me hard again, pulling me through a veil of blackness till I see the twisting street in India again. I am a visitor, walking in a living dream, no sound except for the thumping of my heart, my breath going in and out, the swish of my own blood coursing through my veins. On the rooftops above me, the organ grinder's monkey scampers quickly, baring teeth. I try to speak, but find I can't. He hops onto another roof, a shop where dried herbs hang from the eaves and a small moon and eye symbol, the same as on my mother's necklace, is affixed to the door. A woman comes quickly up the sloping street. A woman with red gold hair, a blue dress, white gloves. My mother. What is my mother doing here? She should be at Mrs. Talbot's house, drinking tea and discussing fabric. My name floats from her lips. Gemma! Gemma! She's come looking for me. The Indian man in the turban is just behind her. She doesn't hear him. I call out to her, my mouth making no sound. With one hand, she pushes open the shop's door and enters. I follow her in, the pounding of my heart growing louder and faster. She must know the man is behind her. She must hear his breath now, but she only looks forward. The man pulls a dagger from inside his cloak, but still she doesn't turn. I feel as if I'll be sick. I want to stop her, pull her away. Every step forward is like pushing against the air, lifting my legs in an agony of slow movement. The man stops, listening. His eyes widen. He's afraid. There's something coiled, waiting in the shadows at the back of the shop. It's as if the dark has begun to move. How can it be moving? But it is, with a cold, slithering sound that makes my skin crawl. A dark shape spreads out from its hiding spot. It grows till it reaches all around. The blackness in the center of the thing is swirling, and the sound, the most ghastly cries and moans come from inside it. The man rushes forward, and the thing moves over him. It devours him. Now it looms over my mother and speaks to her in a slick hiss.
Come to us, pretty one. We've been waiting.
My scream implodes inside me. Mother looks back, sees the dagger lying there, grabs it. The thing howls in outrage. She's going to fight it. She's going to be all right. A single tear escapes down her cheek as she closes her desperate eyes, says my name soft as a prayer. Gemma. In one swift motion, she raises the dagger and plunges it into herself. No!